Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Music Business Podcast presented by Hypebot.com. I'm your host, Kyle Boleyn. Today on this show, I'm talking with Nicole Schifani, who is a marketing lead at Chosen, a talent competition app. Chosen officially launched a few months ago after being in stealth mode for 2 years. I'm going to talk to Nicole about what Chosen is and how she landed a job at the company. We're also going to talk about what exactly it means to gamify the music experience. Make sure that you subscribe to Music Business Podcast in iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can also follow the show and get the latest episodes on SoundCloud. Here is my interview with Nicole Schifani. So Nicole, Chosen is a brand new music app. It launched a few months ago. How would you describe Chosen to someone who has not seen or heard of the company before?
So Chosen is a music app. It's the very first video-based crowd-judged talent competition game for mobile phones. We launched in March of this year. That was our soft launch on iPhone, and we're going to be releasing on Android probably within the next year.
If I'm a music fan and I'm going to install Chosen on my phone, what can I expect to do inside the app?
Inside the app, we have multiple things that you can do. There are pretty much three ways you can participate. The first is as a performer. As a performer, we have cutting-edge recording tools for recording state-of-the-art karaoke. We have a lip sync section as well. You can also freestyle, which essentially means tap the button and you turn the camera on yourself and you can perform. And the last option we have for performers is to upload a performance. And from there, your performances are entered into gameplay. And that's where we bring in the second part of participation, which is participating as a judge. As a judge, you go in the app and you can essentially be the next Simon Cowell. You can be somebody who has incredible music taste in any genre, not just pop music, right? You can go into the app and play these games and choose who you think should be the best. So it's sort of in a reverse American Idol. And then the third way that you can participate is as a spectator, simply by playing games. The thing is, both the judges and the performers have the chance to win in the app. We have badges, points, which we call XP, for experience points. And then we also have a leaderboard where you can work your way up the ranks and earn prizes. So currently, we have one big prize that we're in the middle of right now. This is a contest. It's our first summer music contest where the top judge receives an all, we're not allowed to say all access, but it's an all access pass, an exclusive pass, if you will, to the Bonnaroo Arts and Music Festival happening this June in Tennessee. And the top performer wins a slot on stage on the Who's Who stage. I believe it's Friday at 2:30 that weekend, so weekend of July 11th for anyone who's listening or interested really. I'm hoping people are listening. But it's that weekend and Friday at 2, and yeah, that's what the performer receives. Both folks receive a plus one as all expenses paid, and now we're working on the next set of prizes. We're hoping to do incremental prizes where folks can win headphones every week. The top winners on each leaderboard can receive tickets to concerts in their city. We want to do really big prizes as well, where somebody receives a music video directed by a famous music video director. There are a lot of ideas that we're tossing around in terms of prizes as it relates to the gamification process. Now, back to the spectator. As a spectator, what you can do is participate in gameplay and help the judges win, help the performers win, and by playing the game, that there are two games, and I can talk about them later, but the one with the performers, with the music performers, is called Star Spotting. You can find the next big star. You really have the ability to discover music in a way that's nonlinear. Our aim is to go against the grain of the linear-based talent competition television shows that are out there and present something for a mobile-facing audience. I don't think it's any coincidence that American Idol announced this morning their cancellation after 14 seasons of being on the air. They have competitors, but I think a big part of it too is that they're losing in on a generation that tends to be primarily on their mobile device.
And the American Idol experience, as they've created it, doesn't necessarily transfer over to a mobile social generation.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And on Chosen, you can be somebody who plays incredible hip-hop covers on a violin. You can be somebody who, you know, shreds guitar to songs that aren't necessarily popular, your own version of things that shows like American Idol wouldn't necessarily pick up on. They pick up on pop music, a little bit of hip-hop, R&B, country music. And Chosen really aims to embrace the long tail of all that music has to offer.
And the internet is where that long tail has been trying to promote and market itself for a number of years now.
Absolutely, absolutely. So we're going mobile first and eventually hope to roll out something robust on YouTube as well that is also nonlinear based. We hope to expand our presence there. We've been expanding our presence on our social channels, and it's really interesting because with a younger demographic in mind, Facebook is not where everybody seems to be. We're seeing a lot of reach, a lot of growth happening on our Vine channel, on Instagram. We launched Snapchat, our presence on Snapchat last week, and those are growing in a remarkable way. So it's not only confined to various channels on the internet that one would assume that would be popular, it really is everywhere.
What kind of marketing are you doing for Chosen on Vine, Instagram, and Snapchat?
We're experimenting with many different marketing techniques on Vine, Instagram, and Snapchat. On Vine and Instagram in particular, we've been posting videos of performers that we love who are currently in the app. We've been posting the winners of the weekly Bonnaroo sweeps and tagging them, giving them little shout-outs and creating custom graphics around that. We are also posting little memes that we think are funny. I think our objectives, if we had to really dial them in, would be to entertain our users, to speak from our voice, and to engage with our community. And we are relatively new. We are developing our voice. And I think that's key to any marketing campaign, and also very challenging for startups, is figuring out what that voice is. We talk a lot about it. It's easy to come up with that visual voice, right? The branding, the style guide. You have colors, typefaces, you have your logo and all of those things. You have a shiny new website in HTML5. But what is the content really saying? And in order to find that out, you really need to start listening to what your user base or your intended user base reacts to. And that can be demonstrated by the amount of likes you receive, the amount of reach you're able to achieve with any given post, the amount of comments, likes, all of that feedback really goes a long way in helping to define your voice and ultimately define your brand. And in order for us to do that, we've been experimenting with many techniques. And we find that whenever we put the audience first and we say, what's in it for them? What's something that they'll find entertaining or funny, amusing? What's something that will really resonate with our audience in a way that's smart and unique and different? When we start thinking out of the box in that way, rather than just checking things off a list, it really seems to work.
Your job title at Chosen is marketing lead. What does a marketing lead do? I'd like to get a sense of the things that you're responsible for at Chosen on a day-to-day basis. How does someone like yourself create something out of nothing and build up an audience around your product?
It started from the very beginning. After the app had been built, I started writing some copy for the inside of the app. And writing copy is really interesting. For an app specifically, it's almost like you're writing tiny little haikus, and you want the user to take an action, and you want to do it in the most simple way possible. And that's how it started. And that's how I started thinking about the language of the product. And then it evolved. I would go back and say, no, that's not right. That's not right. We're more fun. We're more youthful. We're this or we're that. And then it came time to get ready for launch. And we began to ramp up our presence on social media. we came up with a catchy, what we thought was a catchy byline, or a, we came up with what we thought was a catchy title for our app. It was a chosen / fame is the game, and fame is the game is what we added on all of our networks, and you can also, referring to social networks, and you can also see it in the app store, and we recently changed it for SEO purposes, but we wanted something snazzy. You know, we started working on those things. What was our presence going to be like? We created some imagery of what we thought best represented the brand, and that's changed already, and it'll continue to change the more we discover. So my role has changed very much. My role has changed very much from the early days of, and when I say early days, this was January, the days of copywriting for in-app materials, for in-app buttons, overlays, things like that, to working with the team to optimize our social networks, to launch some new social networks, to experiment with others to see what's possible, and take meetings with folks to see what makes sense in terms of best practices. You know, I get to work with a really incredible team. They all come from the music space. One person, this is just the marketing team, but our team as a whole, I can speak to that later. They have an incredibly diverse wealth of knowledge. And, you know, it's always been my my goal to work with people smarter than me. And luckily, I get to do that in this position. But my day-to-day really changes. I would say pre-launch is very different than what you do at launch. And what you do at launch is very different from what you wind up doing after launch. So at launch, things are a little crazy. You know, you're reviewing press releases, and after, and the day of, you're gathering all the quotes, and, you know, hopefully you have some. And, but, you know, you have the announcement to write for the blog, and how are we going to position ourselves on social media? All of that is leading up to launch. It's all communications driven. And then after you launch, things change a little bit. Sometimes it pivots more to product mode, like, okay, let's hunker down and strategize based on our findings so far. It's really different for everybody. For us, we're working on some big partnerships that are coming up soon. We're working on refining our voice. We're working on in-app copywriting still. You know, we're rolling out new features. We rolled out a version of the app today that allows email registration, and we also removed the promo code for the app, so nobody needs a promo code anymore. It's open and available for everyone. So every little thing like that requires some copywriting, and we work very closely with the product team. So on any given day for me, I'll be working with product. This morning I was on a Scrum call. I'll do those. I'll meet with my social media strategist. I'll meet with the head of, you know, the person who's heading up YouTube, and she's heading up all of our efforts in video and artist relations. I'll also speak with our CEO about business strategy and upcoming meetings that we have scheduled. I speak with pretty much everybody on a daily basis. Our team is very small, so it's not hard to do. We had a new graphic designer start today, so I was able to interface with him a bit. On the marketing front, I have to say I feel very fortunate because I get to interact with all the departments and have visibility into all of the aspects of what is required to successfully build and launch and iterate on an app.
It definitely sounds like you've worn multiple hats, and the hats change colors based on the days of the week and the responsibilities that you need to fulfill.
Absolutely.
So switching gears a little bit, gamification has been a buzzword on the tech blogs for several years now. It's defined online as the use of game mechanics and game design techniques in non-game contexts. David Hyman, who's the CEO of Chosen, described the app as the gamification of the music experience. What does the gamification of the music experience entail?
The gamification of the music experience in Chosen is currently twofold. We have two games that exist in the app at present, and we're preparing to roll out a third. The first one is called Star Spotting, where you're shown 15 seconds of a performance video, and then at the end, you choose who you think should be the winner. even if the person doesn't win, even if they're not the popular vote, you're still helping them out by giving them XP with your vote, in essence helping them to move up the leaderboard. And you yourself earn XP for participating, in addition to potentially earning badges and working your way up the leaderboard yourself. As a judge, we also have a game called Judge the Judge. This is our second game. Our second game is called Judge the Judge, where you see one music video, and after the performance video, you see two judge reviews, and you watch each one and then choose the one that you think was the best. You choose who you think was the better judge. And then the same thing happens there, where whoever you picked, they're going to receive experience points. And whoever the popular vote is, whether you pick them or not, you know, they're there too. So it's a really compelling experience, because you have the ability, with the popular vote of everybody else playing the games, to choose who should be the next winner. It's almost like texting in with your phone on American Idol, except you can swipe through. If you watch 15 seconds, you can actually swipe through to the next person. You can stop the game. You can play a new game. We're trying to make it more addictive, more fast-paced, more fun. And I think that comes with each iteration of the product that we release, and the more findings that we receive as the app lives in the wild, so to speak. As it refers to gamification, we have two different games in the app, and both of them, whether you're performing as a judge or you're performing as a musician, you have the ability to win, which makes it really exciting, because unlike YouTube, you can actually have your videos pitted against other people and users vote on who they think is the best, which is, you know, we think a much more compelling experience to the comment field on YouTube. There's so much content on sites like YouTube. I mean, it's immense. Words can't even describe. There are millions of videos on YouTube to date, and it's easy to get lost in the shuffle. Whereas on Chosen, it's a smaller audience that is dedicated exclusively to music. So we feel that by gamifying the experience a little bit, it creates something a little more engaging, where there's some discovery happening, but it really encourages folks to be the next big judge. And we believe everybody likes to judge. Everybody has an opinion. Everybody hears a song and they like it, or they might have some feeling about it that they'd want to share. And at the most, in Chosen, you leave a judge review and you become a personality in the app. And, you know, for the passerby person who just wants to play, you choose who you think should be the best. And in that, we feel that there's something really interesting that has the ability to take off, and not necessarily just in music. The model can be scaled out to other verticals as well.
So in your answer there, you said something interesting, which is this concept of making Chosen addictive. Earlier, I was playing around with the app, and I have to imagine that all the sounds that it makes are not an accident. They're carefully tuned in time to positively reinforce the actions that I'm taking in the game. I believe what you're trying to create is a habit loop. Can you explain this element of Chosen?
Absolutely. So we have a sound designer who has carefully constructed all of those bits of music to coincide with the motion elements you see that are happening within the app. The sound designer and the animator work very closely with anything you see that relates to the little flourishes. They're very thoughtfully placed to create a more compelling experience. We really try to hook the user, because we understand that music is a very powerful tool, and even the slightest flourish can get someone's attention.
So what level of addiction are you trying to create here? Like trivia crack style addiction, maybe Candy Crush, Facebook, where you check it every single day forever?
Exactly. So that's a really good question. I think that when you play Chosen, by making it fast-paced and very nimble, we hope that people would want to play one game after the next. And a big part of that is in only showing 15 seconds of each video. And that might even be too long. It'll be interesting to see how it performs with each update we roll out and the modifications we make to the current games that are in the app. We want it to be faster. We want it to be more addictive. And there are things that we're currently working on to help us get there. In essence, it's all about gameplay. It's about hitting the play button and letting the user swipe through the content, feel that they're engaged with what they're seeing, what they're hearing. Hopefully they're liking some of it. And if they're not, I mean, some of the music that's on YouTube is so bad, it's almost good in a way. So there's that factor as well. Entertainment is really what we're looking for. And for those folks who are participating as judges or performers, well, they have the chance to win. We're hoping that when it comes to user behavior, after you make one slight investment in an application, you normally return. And we're hoping that the user will make a slight investment and then they'll return to see how their investment did. A good example of that is our upcoming game called Talent Scout, where you place a bet on who you think will perform the best in the next 8 hours. So essentially, you leave a bet and you come back later. So it's almost an engagement trick that we're using to encourage users to return back to the app. But traditionally, in product development and product marketing, they say you want the user to get hooked, right? You want the user to make a few small investments in the app, and then they want to go back and see how their investments did, whether it's following somebody, voting for somebody, whether it's placing a bet on someone. And then next year, when we introduce in-app currency, we're hoping that'll change the game even more.
So we all have these moments where we're waiting in line for coffee or we're sitting in our car in our driveway and we're bored and anxious and we've reached for our phone. What do you do when you're bored and anxious and reach for your phone? And are you hoping that Chosen fills in those moments of the day for people?
Yes, absolutely. To answer the first part of your question, I have my phone in front of me. It really depends. It takes a habit-forming product to really get me to go to the less informative apps of them all, you know? lately I've been very engaged with the NBA Game Time app now that we're in playoff mode. There's a music gaming app called Rock On that's really fun. I'll check the weather. I'll check my grocery list. I'll check the news. And there are particular apps, not out-of-the-box apps, that I'll use for that I like a lot. I think that is the idea with Chosen. I see somebody on the subway playing Candy Crush, and I think that could easily be Chosen. Or you're killing time in a waiting room somewhere. It's easy to just pull out your phone and play a game to pass the time. So that really is what we're looking for.
I know when Dots became popular that I got sucked into that rabbit hole pretty hard. Did you also get sucked into Dots when it came out?
I never got sucked into Dots, but some of my friends did. One of my girlfriends became obsessed with Dots, and it's all she would talk about. Anytime we would sit down someplace, we'd sit down at happy hour and she'd pull out her phone and start playing Dots, or she'd come over for dinner and, you know, we'd be at the table and we'd be done. She'd be like, oh my gosh, this game, I just can't. This game is just so addictive. I never got into it, though. I'm not that much of a... I like game design. I appreciate gaming very, very much. I don't play a whole lot of apps on my game. I don't play a whole lot of music apps on my phone. I'll play Rock On. But really, you know, I play a lot of Chosen, really. I play a lot of games in the app just to get a good feel, especially when we're getting ready to release a new version of the product.
Absolutely, just to get a good sense of the experience that users are going to have when they engage in the app, what content is surfacing, and where the judges are trending, among a variety of other things, I'm sure.
Yep, absolutely.
So in June of 2012, Tastemaker X set out to gamify music discovery as well. What Tastemaker X allowed people to do is to gain points for discovering indie bands before they became popular. 2 years and one pivot later into collections, I believe, Tastemaker X was acquired by Ardio. A UK startup called Tradio has since picked up the music stock market idea and added real-life rewards such as concert tickets and merch. What is your personal perspective on these various music gamification attempts?
I think it's really interesting. It's going to be different for everyone. I think it's all in, again, what's in it for the user? What if there are tickets, if there are rewards, if they're saving money somehow, if they're finding deals, or if they're access to information, if they have access to information that no one else has access to, if they feel privy to information, I think users respond really well to that sort of thing. It's all about gamification in many ways when it comes to user retention and engagement, because you want to create something that's sticky. Music discovery has always been very lean back, and this is so engaging that it's almost something that users want to do, you know, by choice in their own way, wherever they are on the go. It's something that is entertaining for them, where they're interacting with the music for the very first time. And there's something interesting there that I'm very excited to see play out.
Why do you think there are so many music discovery apps? The other day I opened up Product Hunt. I typed in music and I clicked through several collections and I just felt like, man, like all of these services and apps are trying to get people to discover new music. And historically, that just hasn't proven to be a type of app that's gone supernova, right? Like We Are Hunted became popular. No one doubts the popularity of Hype Machine. And of course, in Pandora, discovery is a byproduct of that larger experience. But I feel like music discovery is this idea that startups latch onto and keep pursuing despite the sort of long history that it's had in the online music sector. What do you think?
I think that there are so many new ways to engage with music, and every year there's something that comes out that people are like, wow, this is the next big thing. And, you know, sometimes it works. A lot of the times it doesn't. There needs to be, I think with music, we haven't really seen a lot of success over the last decade. And there are guys out there like the Hype Machines and the Stereo Gums. And, you know, obviously we have the big ones like Spotify. I think everybody was cheering for them, and SoundCloud, and some interesting things that they were doing. Ardio, of course, you know, so popular and such a beautiful product. And those have really changed the game. And the little guys, I think when music blogs started to be cracked down on, that became a big problem because it prevented a lot of innovation from happening. And it prevented a lot of discovery from happening as well. Music curators, you need to know, they find music in very obscure places, and it's their profession, and they have a hard time doing it. For the average music fan who wants to discover the next big thing, it is so difficult these days to find a new band, to find something new. You almost need to start going to more shows, which is great because we're supporting the artists and so on and so forth. But, you know, it really hurts the idea of music discovery. So I'm really interested to see what happens in the next couple of years. Everybody's battling it out in terms of music rights and who can be the next big platform that everyone's using. But really, when you think about music and the popularity of music, we shouldn't let everything sort of combust in a way to the point where we're using the internet against us.
As someone who has been a curator themselves, who has hosted their own radio show and I believe written for a number of music blogs, what is it like to see the rise of the curator, to see, you know, Jimmy Iovine go on stage at Recode and say, music needs curation. We need smart music experts. And to hear that Apple is now hiring this huge league of music journalists to curate their playlists, to write the introductions, and bring music curation possibly to the widest audience that has ever seen it. Do you feel like you were really early and now this is finally catching on? Do you feel validated that Apple is now saying that music curation is important?
I have mixed feelings about this. When Sasha Fair Jones went to Genius, people were a little dismayed, but then they started seeing what he was doing, and it was incredible work. And it's very important to have annotated lyrics in that way. That's an amazing product. He's just doing something. He's doing the same thing he was doing, but in a very interactive, immersive way that's giving back. And Apple, they say that music curation, we've lost music curation, it's so important, blah, blah, blah. I was devastated to see Zane Lowe from the BBC go over there, because music curators are really, there's the music journalist and the music curator, and they're all, you know, music people are treasures in a way, for some of the reasons I was talking about earlier, where the internet's making it more difficult to seek out and discover new talent. So in a way, I do agree with him, but I want to see it proven, because I don't necessarily believe that a playlist called Mood Lifters or whatever is really going to teach me something new about music that I didn't know before.
But are you the person that it's supposed to teach, I think, is the larger question. One experiment that I've been running for a number of years now is I'll talk to people in the music business, I think such as yourself, we've been talking for a long time, about the appeal of Songza and their mood and activity-based playlists. And then I'll get a chance to just talk to some normal people in bars or dates or wherever. And I always notice consistently across the board, you talk to people in the music business like yourself, and they say, well, I just don't really see the value in having this curated for me. Maybe it's not curated enough. How does Songza know what the mood-boosting playlist is going to be for me today? However, when I ask the same questions to kind of the normal music fan, they look at Songza, they're like, oh, wow, that's really interesting. They see the visuals of how it's arranged, and the imagery is new to them. And they click down, they see a playlist, or I guess they see a set of genres, and then they see the playlist. And within a few taps, they're playing music. And the normal people that I've talked to always seem to get what Songza is getting at instantly, and at least say in the moment that they would enjoy something like that. Whereas music business people, who tend to be more active in their own curation efforts, are more critical of Songza and don't necessarily adopt the service.
I know a lot of folks who love Pandora in a similar capacity, non-music people, that is. Although I know music people who like it too. I'll leave my feelings out of it. But I think that at the end of the day, they want something that is a lean-back experience that adheres to one particular mood or one particular category, and that's it. You know, you don't need to drill down too much deeper than that. For people who are music fans through and through, or, you know, they know what they like and they want to make more modifications, they might become less pleased with this particular model, right? Because they want more levers to pull. They want to have additional ways in which they can modify what they're listening to, the order that they're listening to it in, and the types of progression that the playlist takes. In other words, they would want more control.
So you said you were going to leave your feelings out of this, but I would be upset if you did. What are your feelings about Pandora?
I think it's an excellent product, and it has an incredible story. I remember seeing the CEO speak at a town hall in Los Angeles, that tiny little movie theater on Fairfax. I can't remember what it's called. And he told such an inspiring story about how much he believed in the Music Genome Project, and he maxed out all of his credit cards and this and that. And now here they are right down the street from me. They're out here in Oakland in this incredible building, this huge building. It looks like a bank from the outside, and it says Pandora at the top. So I admired that. But, I mean, the product, I think the ad-based model is probably necessary for what they're doing. But as a musical experience, I feel when I'm listening to Pandora in the way that I would feel in listening to satellite radio, for example. It's just a lot of the same repetitive kinds of material that I would get bored of very easily as a music fan.
Go on.
I don't know. I don't know why people in the music industry have such strong feelings about it. I can't, and myself included, I love Spotify because I have control. But with Pandora, there's something about it that seems very corporate. It's not rock and roll. It's not, you're not going to come across some crazy remix or some B-side of an album that you haven't heard in decades, you know. It's more predictable in that way, and they're monetizing predictability, which is okay, but when it comes to the arts, I think it presents a problem.
Such as?
It presents a problem in the way that it's no longer forward-thinking, and that's what music is supposed to be. It's supposed to capture a zeitgeist. It's supposed to capture a feeling. When you go to Los Angeles and when you go to Los Angeles and tune into KCRW, it definitely has a Southern California feel. When you go to New York and turn on KXLU, it has a very different feel. It has a New York feel. It sounds gritty and it's very eclectic. Now that's terrestrial radio. When you're listening to someone's customized playlist, it represents them in a way, what they like to listen to. It's nuanced, and there are a lot of things that are very specific to one's personal taste, because after all, music is personal. So I'm interested to see what Apple releases next month. I think it'll be overdue. I'm dubious about it. I have some reservations because their last music products haven't been as impressive as they could have been. You know, iTunes was the big one, and then they had a few little things here and there, but I don't know how long ago iTunes came out, but I think that their what they've been doing on the music innovation side is something that has been needing some work, and now finally they're releasing something people are excited about. But again, I remain dubious. It'll be interesting to see what they mean by curation and if they're really hitting the mark on what that personalized music experience really means.
Whether they can bring that feel to the experience that you were talking about earlier.
That's right.
Music startups are interesting because they begin with an idea that resonates with fellow music fanatics, but a lot of them never gain traction with casual mainstream listeners. I think Chosen is smart, it's well executed. I believe it has a much broader appeal, much more so than any other music app that I've seen come out in recent years. But do people want to play American Idol on their smartphone? Like, what do you think is the riskiest assumption or bet that the company is making right now?
You know, it'll be really interesting to find out. We believe that at the intersection of competition programming, gaming, and music, there is something, there's a place where we can find a fit, where we can find a product market fit. So there are many hurdles to overcome. Are people wanting to perform in an app? Do people feel comfortable leaving a video judge review? Are people going to find the app boring? These are all things that we're testing. And with the ability to A/B test things directly in the app, we're able to make decisions and, well, first of all, we're able to make assumptions and then we can make decisions on how to move forward on the product side. But yeah, it's a big risk, right? You go down one path and see what's working and keep iterating on that. And if there's something that's not working, you throw it out and look for a new way to get it done. So anytime you innovate, there's always a risk that is involved. And we're certainly, you know, putting ourselves out there, but it's a risk that we all believe in and are really excited about.
What kind of success stories do you hope will emerge from the app?
We're hoping that we'll be able to discover the next big star. And I know that's a big, bold statement to make considering that we're just launched, we're still a baby. They say that when you launch your V1, it's like having a baby with no clothes and you don't want to show everybody just yet. It's like, okay, there's all, and we're certainly beyond that point. The baby definitely has clothes, but there's still that aspect of, well, what is it going to be when it grows up? We don't even know. We're still figuring things out. It's all brand new to us. And it's very exciting seeing what's working and what's not. At the end of the day, we want to be able to say that we help take a we help take a performer and turn them into a star. And the same goes for a judge. We want to find the next Simon Cowell in our app. We want to find the next person with incredible music taste who has a lot to say. And we want them to be able to share their voice and opinion with the world.
It'll be interesting to see whether a mild-mannered, nice judge succeeds or someone who is entertaining and critical and seems to have a strong music background.
It will. That's something we talk a lot about internally. It's interesting that you bring that up because we don't know what will work. People love controversy. They love drama, and that was one of the big draws of the first season of American Idol, was a lot of the drama and the harsh judge critiques. But then again, there are also music critics out there who bring a lot to the table. We've also seen some very knowledgeable, well-respected judges on some of these talent competition shows who, while they're not the most entertaining, they are informative. And viewers will tend to have a reaction to them. That's really what we want, is some sort of reaction. I think it really is in the delivery. You know, it's really hard to make assumptions at this point. We talk a lot about it a lot internally. We don't know which will perform better, whether it'll be the scathing reviews or whether it'll be ones that are a little more informative and come from a place of critical and encouraging thought.
Now I'd like to spend some time talking about your personal history and professional career. You have been in the music business your entire career. Most recently, however, you spent 2 years in New York City working at a museum, a mobile firm, and a marketing agency. Now you live in the East Bay and you work for a music startup. So you have 2 years there where you left the music business and you're back in it. How do you feel about that idea of leaving an industry that you spent so much time in? Did you ever feel like you were an outsider looking inward?
Sometimes I did. When I first went to New York, I had this grand plan of starting over. I was like, oh, I'm going to show. I'm going to go work in a museum. I'm going to go do the art thing for a while. And the thing about starting over is you really are starting from the beginning with your career a little bit too. For the 10 years I was living in Los Angeles, I had really built up something in music. I don't know what it was. I was always working either on the programming side, more on the technology side, sometimes in the licensing or consulting side, but there was always a common thread and common groups of people you know and congregate with. And that was always familiar. And in New York, nothing was familiar anymore. I kept a radio show for a while. This was, I shouldn't say radio, it was a, okay, let's call it a podcast, if you will. It aired on Mohawk when that was still around, and then I posted them to my site as well, however legally. And so when the project ended at the Guggenheim, I went to a mobile agency where, again, I didn't necessarily feel that I fit in. I had something to bring to the table, and I was learning a lot every single day, but there was something that was a little off. I'd ended the podcast by then, and a friend approached me about DJing a night in Williamsburg every week for, I think I did about a month and some change, filling in for someone at the Brooklyn Bowl, a bowling alley there. So I would go on Sundays and DJ. And that was my taste of getting back into it. And at first I was reluctant. I was like, oh, this again, I have to look for new music. And in those 2 years, I didn't listen to new music. I didn't want to. I didn't care. I wasn't inspired. It was just so much work for so long, even though at the time it was fun. I just needed a break. And then when I started listening to music again, it was all old stuff. And right before I moved to the East Bay, right before David Hyman encouraged me to come out here and join Chosen, I was listening to a lot of opera, and I was going to opera, and I was really obsessed with this idea of, you know, classical music and the way things used to be. And it was almost like technology had pushed me a little too far, and I needed to come back and I needed to rein it in a little bit and just appreciate music for what it was. I became obsessed with acoustics and, you know, going to big, beautiful places where you can hear music in its purest form. I think it was a reaction to the MP3 and a reaction to streaming music and the quality of listening to things through these tiny white earbuds. So as a consumer, I never really felt during those 2 years that I missed it in the sense that I missed the people and the familiarity of the industry. But I was finding music in new ways. I started collecting vinyl again. I started going to shows outside of the opera and go to, you know, Baby's All Right. I'd go to the Mercury Lounge. I'd go places and see baby bands again. And that felt really good. And it was less about the trendy music that people were writing about on the popular blogs and on the websites and lists that you see on big streaming apps. It was much less about that. And I think that had tired me out. So now that I'm back in the music scene, as a consumer, I have a newly found appreciation for the quality of music. Also, the ties that music has to society. I'm listening to a lot of rock from the 60s and 70s, and not opera. It's not opera season right now, unfortunately, in San Francisco. It's picking up again soon, so I'm eager for that. I'm sure that I'll go. But you know, I'm not as obsessed as I was before. It's not as much work, and yet I'm finding much more value. So I wasn't necessarily an insider. I just needed to pivot a little bit.
People always say that landing a job comes down to who you know, but even if you know a person, you still have to be able to provide value to the specific project that they're working on that time with skills that you've developed over time. How did you know David? How did that relationship lead to your job at Chosen?
David and I met when I was working at KCRW. I was working in the new media department, and he was running MOG. And I'll never forget, he was just the nicest guy, and we went downstairs. He was supposed to meet with my boss at the time, Anil Dewan, and I believe Jennifer Farrow was in that meeting too. And they were running late, I think, so I said, hey, you want to grab a coffee? And so KCRW, they're going to be moving soon. There's a new building that's going up in Santa Monica there, but they're currently in the basement of the Santa Monica they're in a basement. They're at Santa Monica College, and they're directly below the cafeteria. So him and I went upstairs, and we had a coffee. And I don't know, we just liked each other right away. And then I would see him around. We'd see each other at music conferences, at places here and there. And I think Facebook was really a way to keep in touch with a lot of folks in the music industry when I moved to New York, David included. He would see things I'd post and this and that. And we stayed in touch. And then last October, he sent me a note, and he said, I'm coming to New York, let's meet up. And I had an idea. I just had an inkling that he was starting something new. And at the time, I had just gone through a bad breakup, and I had just moved out of my place. I was in the process of moving into a new place. I was going from Williamsburg to Soho. I was going through a big life change. And I thought, I don't know if I'm interested in, you know, I'm interested in working with David. I think he's great. And I really respect him and everything he's done in his career. It would be incredible to work for him. But I don't know if I want to go to San Francisco with all this change going on. I really need to find my footing. But of course, David came out and we had dinner. And he showed me what he was working on, and I was immediately hooked. It was a situation where I felt compelled to start thinking about making moves because I was so inspired by the product. In short, you always have to work with people who you respect, with people you like, with people you know you can really work with to move the needle, or at least have a chance at least have a shot. And that's what really did it for me. And now I live here and I love it. It was completely worth the move. I love my job and, you know, everything's worked out great. Sometimes you just need to take a leap, and every so often it takes a friend to help you do that.
And a net to appear on the other end.
Yes.
Otherwise, you're just jumping off a cliff.
Yep. There needs to be a safety mat of some sort.
Or, you know, as the famous phrase goes, you're jumping off a cliff and building the airplane on the way down.
Yes, I'd say many folks in the Bay Area would agree with that and understand what it's like to engage that way on a day-to-day basis in the workplace.
So, Nicole, I've got one final question for you. Let's imagine that a 26-year-old girl who has a few years of experience in the music business emails you tomorrow. She says, Nicole, I heard your interview on the Music Business podcast. I enjoyed what you had to say. I'd love to work at a music startup like Chosen in the Bay Area. What kind of advice would you offer this person?
I would say reach out to as many people as you can and ask a lot of questions. Take a lot of people out to coffee. Pick their brains. See what they have to say. When I first moved to Los Angeles, I took a meeting with somebody in the new media department from Universal. This was in spring of 2004. And he's like, you don't want to work here. This place is a big, fat, bloated sinking ship. And I was like, but this is my dream job. And I just moved from the East Coast, and I had like these black pressed Brooks Brothers pants on and like a button-down shirt. And this is Santa Monica, you know, everyone's wearing flip-flops. You have to pursue what you want, and you'll be surprised at what you find out. This person who I met, he wound up giving me some incredible advice, and we're still friends. I had originally met him because I went to a music conference. He was on a panel, and directly after I walked up to him and I said, hey, can I email you sometime? I would love to chat. I really enjoyed what you had to say. And he said, sure, of course. And I was 22, I think, somewhere in there. Don't be afraid. LinkedIn makes it very easy. It's easy to find someone's email address. Just reach out, set up some meetings, ask a lot of questions, and remember that you need to pay your dues. There's a lot to learn out there, and it does not end. It does not end. There's always something. I'm learning something new every single day, so I think it's really important to be humble. Take as much in as you possibly can, and don't be afraid to ask people if they need help. Finding work in the music industry is always a difficult thing, especially in something as nuanced as music and technology, where startups are popping up all the time. If it's something that one feels very strongly about, then it's worth going to the networking events. It's worth going to the conferences. I can't tell you how many times I would spend my own money to fly from LA to New York to go to a music conference, or go up to Portland to attend something, or sit on panel after panel of people just talking and talking, hoping that something would sink in. And they were talking about music rights, and I would have no idea, but eventually something would stick, and it felt good, and you have to pursue those things because there are so many aspects of the music industry. Do you like streaming? Do you like the label side of things? There are a lot of really interesting little pockets of musical movements happening in the Bay Area right now. Is that something you'd want to do? Are you more of a marketing person? Do you like to talk with many different folks? Or is it more of a communications angle? I'd really hone in on your strengths and see how you can apply them to the music industry, because it's really good to take all of those meetings, but you also have to give. You also have to give back. And by offering people the help, you would be putting yourselves ahead of the others like you looking for a job at a music company, because many folks aren't willing to do that these days.
And I've always found that people are more than willing to spend time with you to answer your questions and get to know you if you took the effort to reach out, because what people forget is that a lot of people don't put in that effort at all.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of people don't put in that effort. It's about asking questions and learning about their experiences. I think it was Dale Carnegie or someone who said that people love to talk about themselves. You know, people, they want to share their experiences and their stories, and that is a great place to start. It's something that not everybody does. And at the end of the day, we should be beyond LinkedIn. It's the easy way. You know, strangers friend me all the time. And I'm like, and I feel badly about it. It's like, if I were to receive an email or a phone call from somebody who wants to meet, that is much more meaning to it, let alone an in-person conversation, face-to-face.
Well, Nicole, it's been great having you on the show tonight. If people want to look you up online and learn more about Chosen, where can they find that information?
Chosen can be found in the iTunes App Store. You just do a search for Chosen. The website is chosen.fm, and my personal website is nicolesafani.com.
Well, Nicole, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight and sharing your thoughts on Chosen and your plans to gamify the music experience. That's all for this episode of the Music Business Podcast. Thanks to Hypebot.com for helping to put this podcast out. If you have any questions or comments, please email me at kyle.bylin@gmail.com. That's kyle.bylin@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you, quite honestly. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoyed this excellent interview with Nicole Schifani.